The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
In Destroyer number 117, Deadly Genes, there are unpredictable consequences when scientists become their own science projects.
Shut up.
There are two of them. Two BCWs. I mean, two. In there. Dr. White, this, probably isn't a good idea.
Of course it is. Have you eaten yet?
What? Yes. Yes, I have.
It's been a few hours for me. I'm hungry again.
We can get something after?
Maybe a little something to tide me over.
And when a feeding frenzy ensues among genetically warped predators, and the hunters become the hunted, can Remo and Chun manage to stay on top of the food chain?
You're fast. You were supposed to lead him over to me. He moved too fast. Yeah. What's so funny?
You, Snagglepuss. You're already dead, and you don't even know it.
He's bluffing.
Twy me, putty tats.
You are in league with the fiend.
I am now. I just met Dr. White. Nice woman. Though much like her taste in beverages. But I think I found a chew toy to cleanse my palate.
When life-saving research has death-dealing results, and helpless lambs seem to become bloodthirsty lions, who do Remo and Chun protect, and who must they kill? Find out what happens when Petri dishes roar in Destroyer number 117. Deadly Genes. Now available on Graphic Audio.
And now for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight.
Station Tug 34, permission to grapple.
Permission to grapple.
All fast, on your signal.
Captain Serrano of Sweet Delight, permission to undock on your signal.
All clear on station. Confirm all clear aboard.
All clear aboard.
Graphic Audio presents The Serrano Legacy by Elizabeth Moon. Book 3, Winning Colors, Part 1. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Tess Rowan, Michael John Casey, Terrence Aselford, Sonny Lasky, M.B. Van Dorn, Michael Glenn, James Konacek, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Peter Stray, Lily Beacon, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Demery, Andy Clements, Ken Jackson, and Mort Shelby.
Otala sat on a hard bench, elbow to elbow with the rest of Cell 571, munching the supper, processed protein extruded into pseudo-sausages nested in pickled neo-cabbage that preceded the evening's entertainment. Or so she called it. She was aware that her fellow conspirators considered it more important than anything else in their lives. Her friends would not have recognized her. Her normally bronze skin had the pallor associated with the underbellies of cave-dwelling amphibians. Her dark eyes were masked with blue contact lenses, which also gave her red-rimmed lids, the better to fit in with the locals. She wore the same dark, ill-cut coveralls and had the same fingertip calluses as the others. She had held a real job on the assembly line, with faked papers, which wasn't that unusual, for the past 2 months. It was all a great adventure. She now knew things about her family's company that she had never imagined. She would have incomparable tales to tell when she went back topside. Meanwhile, she could eat sour pseudo-sausage, drink cheap wine, use words her parents didn't even know, and find out for herself if the reputation of Finvardian men was deserved. So far, she wasn't sure. Einar had ranked only average on her personal scale, but if Sikar would only look at her. Otala had come to think that conspirators came in two basic flavors. The bland vanillas, usually wealthy, met in comfortably appointed boardrooms or dining rooms, scenting the air with expensive perfumes, liqueurs, and good food. The more complex chocolates, usually impoverished, met in dingy back rooms of failing businesses or scruffy warehouses, where the musty air stank of dangerous chemicals and unwashed bodies, just like the room she inhabited now. The vanillas, when they cursed, did so with a sense of risk. The chocolates cursed without noticing, the familiar phrases embedded in their speech like nuts in candy. The vanillas claimed to loathe violence, resorting to it with reluctance. The chocolates embraced violence and its tools as familiar and comforting rituals. No wonder, since when the vanillas chose violence, they employed chocolates to carry it out. Otala much preferred luxury herself. She considered that a long, leisurely soak in perfumed water was the only civilized way to begin the day. She, too, felt the little shock of surprise when she heard the expletives come out of her own mouth with no immediate punishment. Her skin preferred the sensuous touch of silk. Her taste buds rejoiced during elaborate dinners created by talented cooks. But she could not confine her sensuality to the bland end of the spectrum. Vanilla was not enough. In her own mind, she considered her taste for chocolate an expression of unusual sensitivity. She finished her supper, as the others finished theirs. Odd how the same custom held at tables high and low. Everyone tried to finish at the same time. Across the room, Sikar stood. He was the contact from higher up, the man whose respect they all wanted. Even in the baggy, dark clothing, he had presence. Otala couldn't analyze it. She only knew that she felt his intensity as a pressure under her ribcage. She wanted that pressure elsewhere. As usual, Sikar began speaking without preamble.
We, the young, serve the old. And the old can live forever now. And they expect us to serve forever. We will grow old and die, but they will not. Is this right? No! It was bad before, when the old rich first set their hands against the gate of death. But 150 years is not forever. That is why our fathers and grandfathers submitted. They hoped to afford that process for themselves, and it was limited. But now...
They live forever, and we work forever, and our children...
Forever! Their children will live forever, too. Our children will die forever. But there is a chance! Now, while the government is shaken by the king's...
They had discussed this night after night, what it meant that the king had resigned. Would it help the cause or hurt it? Rejuvenance littered both sides of the political scene. Almost everyone rich and powerful enough to be a force in the government had been rejuvenated at least once. Apparently, the hierarchy had decided it was a good thing, and now they could act. Otala pulled her mind back from its contemplation of the aesthetics of Sikar's striking coloring. Those fire-blue eyes, the pale skin, the black hair with the silver streak, to listen to his speech.
But before we act, We must purify ourselves. We must not allow any taint of the rejuvenant to corrupt our purpose. Are you sure? Sure that none among you harbors a sneaking sympathy with those old leeches?
Otala's parents weren't old leeches. They were merely idiots. When she had to say these things, she always thought of people she didn't like.
Are you sure? Because I am not. In other cells, we found those pretending to be with us and secretly spying on us for the rejuvenants.
Secretly spying was exactly the kind of rhetoric that Otala enjoyed. She curled her tongue around it in her mouth, not realizing until Sikar stood in front of her table what he was leading up to. The tool in his hands, though, clenched the breath in her chest. Otala recognized it. Everyone did, who had ever changed fertility implants. It would locate even unexpired implants and could be used to remove them. But no one here had implants, except her.
Put out your arms, brothers and sisters, for this is how we found the traitors before. They had implants.
Otala couldn't move. She wanted to jump and run. She wanted to scream, "You don't understand!" And she knew that wouldn't work. Sikar smiled directly into her eyes, just as she'd wanted since she'd first seen him. Even though she knew she could not really feel anything, she was sure her implant itched. The skin above it fluoresced, a brilliant blue.
Maybe she was a manager's favorite!
Maybe she's an owner's daughter. We'll see.
He pressed the tool to her arm. She had no doubt of the next sensation. No anesthetic spray, no numbing at all. The tool's logic ignored her pain and sliced into her arm. Her arm throbbed. She was surprised that she hadn't screamed, but she was still too scared. Those holding her tightened their grips. Sikar held up the implant.
You see? And this tool will tell us whose it is!
She had forgotten that, if she'd ever known. Implants carried the original prescription codes. That had something to do with proving malpractice. Sikar touched the implant to a flat plate on the tool's side.
As we suspected, this is a rejuvenant. Child of rejuvenants, our mortal enemies! This is one who would enslave our children to her pleasure for all time!
No.
Shut up! This isn't a game, rich girl.
Before she died, Otala wanted to revise her earlier opinion and say that some conspirators tasted of neither vanilla nor chocolate, but of blood. But she could not speak, and no one would have listened if she had. Mid-afternoon already, and they'd hardly made a dent in the day's work. Lord Thornbuckle leaned back in his chair.
I could be angry with Kentry about this, too. Because he was an idiot, I have to sit here doing his work.
Kevil Mahoney, formerly an independent and successful attorney, had agreed to help his friend in the political crisis left by the king's resignation.
You wanted the job. Am I supposed to sympathize? I could be in court showing off.
As if you'd miss it. No, we're doing the right thing, if we can pull it off.
If? The eminent Lord Thornbuckle has doubts?
Your old friend Bunny has doubts. Nothing makes a rabbit nervous like the predator who pretends not to see him. We haven't heard anything from the Benignity. By now, I expected at least one raid.
Don't stare at that fox too long, my friend. There are wolves in the world, too.
As if I didn't know. Yes?
Sorry, my lord. An urgent signal from Patchcock. Shall I transfer or bring it in?
Bring it. And the coffee, if it's ready.
He would have that, at least, no matter what the trouble was. One of the senior clerks, Poisson, he thought the name was, came in with a cube, followed by two juniors with a trolley. Poisson waited until they had left before handing over the cube.
It's partly encrypted, my lord, but I read the part that wasn't. It's the same region on Patchcock where the troubles were before, and apparently a family heir has gone missing.
Bunny could hear the capital letter that elevated mere genetic relationship to political power. Not just a family, but a family. One of the chair-holding families.
Otala Moraline, the second oldest but designated heir of...
Oscar and Vitilla Moraline, Vorisept of the Consulines, right.
One of his own daughter's schoolmates. He remembered Bubbles... No, she was calling herself Brun now, talking about her. Brun hadn't liked her. He remembered that much, though he didn't remember why. The Consulines. That extended family had over a dozen chairs in council. The Vorisept, though the minor branch, had five. The Moralines held four of them.
Kidnapped?
Ah, no. It seems she had disguised herself as a Finvardian and infiltrated a workers' group.
A Moraline?
The Moralines had, for the past two centuries at least, chosen to emphasize their darker ancestry. And the video of Otala that came up when he inserted the cube showed a dark-skinned, dark-haired young woman. A beauty, Bunny noted, remembering now that he had seen her at some social function a year or so before. She had matured, as Brun had, showing more bone structure. But how had this girl imitated a pale, blue-eyed Finvardian?
The family located the skin sculptor. She bought a 400-day depigmentation package, bleached her hair, wore blue contact lenses.
Why didn't she get an eye job while she was at it? What if she dropped a lens?
I couldn't say, sir. When she didn't turn up for her younger brother's Seagrin, the family popped her emergency cash and found her last report. She included a vid of herself after she adopted the disguise and said she planned to involve herself in a workers' organization to see what it felt like.
Bunny watched the cube readout. Otala's disguised self looked very different, he had to admit. If not quite Finvardian, at least nothing like the Moraline heir. He wondered if she'd had a temporary bone job, too. Her face seemed to have changed shape as well as color. According to the readout, she had had no trouble buying false IDs and getting a job in an assembly factory on Patchcock. But she'd dropped out of sight, without notice to her work supervisor or anyone else, some 40 days before her family came looking.
The problem, my lord, is that it's Patchcock.
Yes?
I don't know if you knew all about Patchcock.
Not really. It was a nasty situation, is all I know, and someone in the regular space service messed up in a major way.
I think perhaps you need to read the background briefs.
That was far more assertive than Poisson's usual approach, and Bunny stared.
Very well. If you...
Here they are.
A stack of cubes it would take him hours to wade through, all marked with the security code that meant they were encrypted and could be read only with all the room's security systems engaged. Bunny glanced at Kevil.
Do not remind me again that I volunteered for this job. I could cheerfully strangle his late majesty.
Poisson, he noticed, had the look he had always imagined concealed satisfaction at landing responsibility on someone else. The Patchcock affair, when they finally got it straight late that night, explained a lot of things, many more than were explicated in the cubes, revealing as those were.
That had to be the stupidest thing Otala could have done. Going undercover in a workers' organization would be risky enough right here in Castle Rock, but on Patchcock? Didn't she know any history?
We didn't. If she thought it was just a military blunder, if she didn't know how her family came to gain control of the investments there...
She must be dead, you know. If she were alive, she'd have refreshed her emergency cash.
Couldn't she be a captive? Held for ransom?
No. My criminal experience tells me she's dead. They found her out somehow, stripped her of any information they could pry out, and killed her. Eventually, the Morlines will figure that out too, and then... Then we'll have real trouble.
Yes.
Bunny thought about the Moralines. He knew them in the casual way that all the chairholders knew each other, but they were not really in his set. They didn't hunt, for one thing. But he had dealt with them more than once in business and in the council. They were tough, aggressive, and very sore losers. That this could be a self-description, he recognized. But that didn't make the prospect of angry Moralines any more appealing.
If we sent Fleet back in there, it would only make things worse.
If she's dead already.
But Bunny had to know what Otala Moraline had found, even if he couldn't bring her back. He stretched his back out. The whole situation he'd inherited, jumped into, he reminded himself, felt dangerously mushy. Too many things he didn't know, past and present. Too many ways to make mistakes, even if he did know everything. And the image of his daughter Brunn intruded. Brunn had already involved herself in wild adventures, working her way across familiar space as an ordinary spacer. If Brunn heard about this, she would insist on going herself to find out about Otala. Where could he park her safely?
At least it'll be a change from this stupid bickering about rejuvenation. Those poor bastards in the mines and factories on Patchcock have more substantial concerns.
Bunny nodded, but his thoughts kept running to Brunn. Finally, he thought of the one thing he might be able to do. In the morning, he would place a call to Harris Serrano.
I must thank you again for whatever you said to my daughter.
Lord Thornbuckle didn't look much like Bunny in his dark formal suit in the paneled office. He didn't intend to.
She was, I'm sure, about to do something rash. What she told me afterwards was that she'd planned to run away and join the regular space service anonymously. But I expect it was worse than that.
No, or at least that's what she told me.
Harris Serrano had been aboard the yacht, supervising the last of its refitting. Her office aboard looked nothing like his. On the wall behind her were only a military-grade chronometer and the framed certificates of her rating. She had a new uniform, not the loud purple Lady Cecilia had once used, but the same competent expression, the same intelligent dark eyes.
She outgrew herself in a hurry on the island.
I know, and she seems to have inherited ancestral temptations to adventure. You know how she got to Rockhouse Major from Rotterdam?
Shoveling manure on a livestock hauler, yes. Even the unpleasantness she got into didn't dissuade her. And now she wants to use some of her inheritance to finance a small expedition. A small ship, rather, on which she intends to wander around looking for excitement. Responsibly, she assures me. Nothing wild of the sort she did in her youth.
Youth. The girl's barely old enough to consider a seat in council. And you'd think she was 50.
She did come through safely, sir.
Yes, I know. And I know it means she's inherited, no doubt from the same ancestors, the ability to survive adventure. But I'm not sure I can survive her acquisition of the necessary experience. Not without knowing there's someone with more expertise and more maturity to help her out of the tight spots she's so determined to get into. Even Thornbuckles have limits to their luck.
You were thinking that I might know someone with the right skills to accompany her?
I thought you might be that person. Not that alone. I know you'll be traveling with Ceci. But she said she wanted to do more than make the various horse events. And I wondered if you'd let Brunn come along. As an employee or passenger or whatever you like. I would, of course, pay her passage.
No, sir, don't pay her passage. If she's set on adventuring, she might as well earn her own way. She's already proved she could. I assume she has an allowance. Let her use that if she wants.
Right. Fine. Then you'll take her?
I don't know.
She had liked Brunn well enough, he knew. But clearly she was thinking about the difficulties inherent in mixing a girl like Brunn into a crew already facing difficult adjustments. She wouldn't want trouble. She had had enough already.
I'm not sure I'm the right person.
Lord Thornbuckle leaned over and touched his desk. He gestured to the row of red lights that came on and waited for her look of recognition.
Harris, let me tell you something that must remain a secret. A young woman Brunn knows, new, a schoolmate, went off on an adventure, joined a workers' organization over on Patchcock, and got herself killed when she was discovered. Brunn doesn't know. We've managed to suppress it. But the girl's family is furious with me. They wanted me to send the RSS to Patchcock again.
Harris stared. She could easily imagine the carnage. It had been bad enough the first time.
That's not wise, sir.
No, I understand that. I've seen the classified briefings. The thing is, Brunn's the ideal hostage to use against me. Either side might try it. She's too old to send home. She wouldn't stay, and I can't tell her about Atala. I know she won't be safe, really safe, anywhere. But you might be able to keep her safer than anyone else.
All right. I'm willing to have her aboard, if she's willing to come. I'm not about to Shanghai her.
Oh, she's willing. Apparently she made some friends in your crew, didn't she?
Sirkin, I suppose. At least they went around together for a while, but that was our plan. A way that Brune could pass information about Lady Cecilia to me indirectly. I wouldn't have called it a friendship. Sirkin's lover had just died, but it's something. All right. I suppose Brune could have considered it a friendship. I'll list her as unskilled crew and let them teach her some things, if that's acceptable.
Good. On top of everything else, I'll be glad to have her out of pocket while the political situation is so uncertain.
Chemtree Lord Altman, formerly king of the Familius Regnant, tried to reason with his wife over breakfast.
I don't see why you can't understand. They're your sons as much as mine.
They're no one's sons.
Although his wife seemed to lean on the end of the table, elbows on either side of a tray of fancifully carved fruits, that was illusion. A matter of expensive communications equipment synchronizing her image from past breakfasts with her voice from very far away.
Certainly not mine, and not yours either if you only knew it. They're clones, constructs, human only in genome. You were never a father to them. I was never a mother.
Chemtree pressed his fingers to his temples, a gesture that had been effective in council meetings. It had not worked with her for years, and it did not work now, not least because she did not have the visual display on her console turned on. He kept hoping to see the telltale red light turn green. He wanted to meet her eyes, her real eyes, not those of the construct, and convince her with his sincerity.
They're all we've got! They could be our sons if you'd only...
They're grown. They're not little boys. They're bad copies of Gerald. Was he the only one you cared about?
Of course not, he wanted to say. He had said it before, just as they had had this argument before in the weeks since his resignation. At first face to face, then down the length of that long dining table, then by the various communications devices required by the increasingly great physical distances between them, as she removed herself from his demands.
Please.
No.
The live connection ended. The construct sat immobile, waiting for his finger to extinguish its imitation of life. He put his thumb down. She wanted him to give it up, deal with the loss of his sons, get on with whatever life was left him. He couldn't do that. Not until he had at least tried to get the clones to cooperate. They were the only sons he had now. The senior accountant of the Benignity of the Compassionate Hand looked at the chairman across the boardroom table.
I don't see any reason to butcher the cash cow. Breed her and we'll have more calves to send to market.
She's a shy breeder.
The diplomatic subordinate should have kept quiet. It was his last mistake. When the meeting resumed, several people walked across the damp patch on the carpet as if nothing had happened. It wasn't unusual, and it didn't really reflect on Sasimo, whose protege had been unwise. Every senior man present had discovered that a first appearance in the boardroom could unsettle a youngster previously considered promising.
Still, he had a point.
No one asked to what the chairman was referring. Those who couldn't figure it out didn't belong there.
The Familius walks like a tart and talks like a tart, but carries a hat pin in her purse.
The hat pin being, as they all knew, the regular space service's unbought fraction, which they knew down to the level of Cook's assistants.
It's a short hat pin, not long enough to reach the heart of a strong man. A little risk, a prick perhaps, and better a marriage than a disgrace, right?
Right, if it's only a flesh wound. Perhaps our admiral would review the situation?
But indeed, the situation looked good. Not only were so many fleet personnel on the Compassionate Hand payroll, as it were, but they had been placed into critical positions. Given a good start, with new forward bases increasing the number of jump points they could reach undetected, the regular space service should be immobilized by uncertainty as well as internal problems. The admiral pointed out the system on the display.
We start here. They're used to neglect from the RSS. Athras World Raiders took out their stationary defenses last year, and they've been issued nothing to replace them. It's an agricultural world, thinly populated. We'll lose no essential industries if we scorch it lightly.
Resistance?
negligible. Farmers with hand weapons. Even if they scatter and survive the scorch, we can ignore them.
Principal crop?
Horses, if you can believe it.
Horses?
And not workhorses. They export sperm and embryos of fancy horses.
The chairman leaned back, thumbs in his waistcoat pockets.
Show horses. I like horses. If they survive the scorch, I'd like a souvenir pairing.
Which meant they had better survive the scorch.
Of course.
My granddaughter, you know, she likes pretty horses.
As if the chairman needed to explain, he turned back to the admiral.
Be sure to bring one Lotta would like. White feet, a long tail, that kind of thing.
Of course.
The admiral began tallying in his mind the extra time it would take to scorch selectively, so that the chairman's granddaughter could have a pretty horse for a souvenir. It shouldn't be too bad, even if their agent betrayed them. He would add another couple of ships to the advanced strike force, which would give them the margin for a careful scorch.
And why not this system? It has the same advantages.
Nearly.
One did not directly contradict one of the board. Not if one wanted to leave the room with breath intact.
But it connects directly to only one jump point, with only three mapped vectors. As well, it's near enough to Guernsey space that the Guernsey might take notice. Our chosen target connects directly to two jump points, offering a total of eight mapped vectors, most of them into high vector points. And, of course, its other border is the unstable one with Athra's world, from which the raiders have come.
Quite so. We have already approved your target, Admiral.
That was dismissal, and the Admiral saluted, bowed, and left. When he reached his office, he found that he had been given a final command. Interesting that the chairman had not wanted to say that in front of the others. The chairman would be honored if the admiral would allow the chairman's great-nephew, now in command of a heavy cruiser, to be part of this expedition. Unmentioned was the young man's record. Neither needed to mention it. The young man had risen more by influence than ability, everyone was sure. And yet he wasn't stupid or cowardly.
Dangerous to both friends and enemies. Convinced that his real successes have been overlooked, along with his mistakes, because of his relationship.
The admiral considered. Was this the chairman's way of letting the younger man hang himself, or his way of sabotaging the admiral, whose own grandson might otherwise have been chosen? He couldn't take both. He could afford only one less experienced captain. Of course, he must take the chairman's choice, but he need not make it easy. He would assume, he would document that assumption, that the chairman wished to test his kinsman, wished him to prove himself. He grinned suddenly.
Let him be the one to bring home a pretty horse for Carlotta.
Uncertain, Harris thought, was a mild term for the swiftly unraveling tangle of political yarn that had so recently seemed to be a stable web of interlocking interests. All her life, for many hundreds of standard years, the Familia's Regnant had had its grand council, and commerce had passed between its worlds and stations as if no other way existed. She knew, of course, that other ways did, that Familia's space was surrounded by other ways of doing things, from the cold efficiency of the Compassionate Hand to the berserker brigandry of Athar's world. But aside from those whose business it was to keep the borders safe and enforce the laws, most of the Familia's worlds and the people on them had behaved as if nothing but fashion would ever change. And now it had. With the king's resignation, with Lorenza's flight, the founding families looked at each other with far more suspicion than trust. If the king had poisoned his own sons, or if Lorenza had done it for him, if she had attacked the powerful DeMarctos family through Cecilia, then who else might have been her target? Her allies? Those who had used her services through the decades tried to cover their tracks, and others worked to uncover them. What bothered Harris the most in all this was the civilian's innocent assumption that the fleet would never let anything bad happen. She had heard it over and over. No need to worry about Centrum Rose. The fleet will see that they stay in the Alliance. No need to worry about the Benignity attacking. The fleet will protect us. Yet she knew, and Bunny should have known, that the fleet itself was suspect. Lorenza hadn't been the only rat in the woodpile. There was also Admiral Lupescu and whoever cooperated with him. But she could not solve everything, not all at once. She had other work to do before Cecilia came aboard the yacht. Her personal stack had a message from Arash Levadi.
Now what?
It had been a long enough day already, and she had hoped Petrus would get back in time for some extended dalliance. She called Arash.
How are things going?
Fine with me. And you?
Oh, very well, very well. It's been an interesting few weeks, of course.
So it had, with rumors of entire squadrons of fleet in mutiny. With one cryptic message from her grandmother, and a very uncryptic message from the cousin who had always hated her.
Yes. I had a message that you called.
Oh, yes, that. I just wondered if you'd like to have dinner sometime. Tonight, maybe. There's a new band at Salieri's.
Sorry, there's ship business to deal with.
Certainly, the captain's relationship with the first engineer was ship's business.
Oh, another time? Maybe tomorrow?
Harris opened her mouth to tell him to come clean, then remembered the doubtful security of their link.
I should be free then. Why not? What time?
Whatever's best for you. Maybe mid-second shift?
An odd way of giving a time for either a civilian or a fleet officer. Harris nodded at the screen and hoped she could figure out later what kind of signal he was giving her.
Mid-second indeed. Meet you there?
Why not at the Shuttle Bay Concourse? You shouldn't have to dash halfway across the station by yourself.
Odder and odder. Arash had never minded having his dates use up their own resources. Harris entered the time and place in her desktop calendar and grinned at him.
It's in my beeper. See you tomorrow.
Yes. Tomorrow, then.
Arash Levadi had been waiting when Harris reached the shuttle dock's concourse. He wore his uniform with his old dash and attracted more than one admiring glance. Harris wanted to tell the oglers how futile their efforts were, but knew better. Now he walked beside her as courteously as a knight of legend escorting his lady. It made Harris nervous.
There's a little problem. Nothing major, just a bit awkward.
And solving awkward problems is a civilian specialty? Come on, Arash. You have some of the best finaglers in fleet on your ship.
It's not that kind of thing, exactly.
Well, what exactly?
It's something you'd be much better at. You know, you have a talent...
Arash, I'm hungry, and you've promised me a good meal. At least wait until I'm softened up before you start trying to put your hooks in.
Me?
But that wide-eyed look was meant to be seen through. He grinned at her. It no longer put shivers down her spine.
Oh, very well. I did agree to feed you. Salieri's is still acceptable?
Entirely.
Expensive and good food, a combination rarer than one might suppose. And whatever Arash thought he was getting from her, it would not include anything more than a dinner companion. She wondered if he had any idea of her present situation with Petrus. Probably not, and better that he live in blissful ignorance. Salieri's, midway through the second shift, had a line out to the concourse, but Arash led her past it.
We have reservations.
Sure enough, the gold-robed flunky at the door let them pass. Harris felt her spirits lift in the scarlet and gold flamboyance of the main foyer, with live orchestra in the main dining room. Whatever Arash wanted, this would be fun. 2 hours later, after a lavish meal, he got down to it.
You do owe me a favor, you know.
True. That and a fat bank account will get you dinner at Salieri's.
Hard-hearted woman. I suppose even civilian life couldn't soften your attitude.
I'll take that as a compliment, Captain Levadi. What's your problem?
You mentioned my illustrious crew. My, talented finaglers.
So I did. So they are. What else?
There's something I need to get off my ship. Quickly. I was hoping...
What's he done?
It's not so much that. More like something he didn't do. And he needs to spend some time out of contact with Fleet Command.
Or he'll drag you down with him?
Harris was not surprised to see the sudden sheen of perspiration on Levadi's brow.
Something like that. It's related to the matter you and I were involved in, but I really don't want to discuss it in detail.
But you want me to spirit him away for a while without knowing diddly about him?
Not in detail.
Lavati gave her a look that had melted several generations of female officers. She simply smiled and shook her head.
Not without enough detail to keep my head off the block. How do I know that you aren't being pressured to slip an assassin aboard to get rid of Lady Cecilia? Or me?
It's nothing like that.
The truth, Lavati.
The truth is, it's not like that. It's not an assassin. It's my best communications tech, who's heard what he shouldn't have and needs a new berth. He's a danger to himself and to the ship where he is.
On my ship, with my friends. Are you sure no one's put you up to this to land trouble on me?
On my honor.
Which meant that much was true. The Lavatis, crooked as corkscrews in some ways, had never directly given the lie while on their honor. She knew that. He knew that she knew that.
All right. But if he gives me the wrong kind of trouble, he's dead.
Agreed. Thank you.
Then, what he'd said earlier caught up with Harris.
Communications tech. Kutsudis?
Yep.
Good heavens, Arash, what is the problem?
I can't say. Please, he may tell you if he wants. I don't think it's a good idea, but the situation may change, and I trust his judgment. Just take care of him, if you can.
Oh, I think we're capable of that. When do you want him back?
Not until things settle down. I'll let you know. Well, that's all taken care of. Would you like to dance?
Harris thought about it. Arash had been a good dancing partner in the old days, but in the meantime, she'd danced with Petrus at the hunt ball.
No, thank you. I had better get back to work. When shall I expect, your package?
Efficient as ever. Or have I lost the touch?
Oh, I don't think so. You just put the touch on me pretty effectively. But my owner isn't thrilled with the number of ex-military crew we have now, and she's going to have kittens, or, in her case, colts, when she finds out about this. I have some preliminary groundwork to do.
Ah, well then, allow me to escort you at least to the concourse.
Better not. This was a very public meeting, and I can understand your reasoning. But why let whomever is interested think you might have convinced me of whatever it is you were after?
I thought an open quarrel would be too obvious. If we were simply courteous...
I am always courteous, Commander, as well you know. Even in a quarrel.
Ouch. Well, then, since I can't persuade you...
He rose politely, with a certain stiffness, and she nodded. An observant waiter came to her chair, and although they walked out together, they were clearly not a couple.
I'm sorry, Commander, but things have changed. It's not just being a civilian. I have other commitments. I'm sure you'll understand. It's not wise at times like these.
But
I can find my way, Commander. Best wishes, of course.
Watching eyes could not have missed that cool, formal, and very unfriendly parting. The newly refurbished yacht Sweet Delight lay one final shift cycle in the space-enhanced docks as Harris Serrano inspected every millimeter of its interior. Forest green carpet soft underfoot, crisp green, blue, white, paisley-patterned wall covering in the dining salon. She pushed from her mind the secret knowledge that it was all made of reconstituted cockroaches. At least the ship didn't smell like cockroaches anymore. The galley and pantries, left in gleaming white and steel by Lady Cecilia's command, had no odd odors. In the recreation section, everything looked perfect. The swimming pool had its new screen programs. Harris flicked through them to be sure the night sky had been removed. Lady Cecilia didn't want any sudden darkness to remind her of the months of blindness she'd endured. The massage lounger had its new upholstery. The riding simulator had a new saddle and a whole set of new training cubes, including the two most recent wear-in trials recordings. The crew quarters, while not quite as luxurious as the owner's section, had more amenities than crews could expect anywhere else. Harris's own suite reflected a new comfort with her civilian status. She had installed a larger bed, a comfortable upholstered chair, and chosen more colorful appointments. Down in the holds, she checked for any leftover debris from the renovation. She had already found a narrow triangle of wall covering and two odd-shaped bits of carpet.
Harris!
Harris grinned and backed out of the number three hold. Cecilia would want to see for herself that every single cockroach cage had been removed.
Coming!
But Cecilia's rejuvenation had left her with more energy than she could contain. Here she was, striding down the corridor at top speed.
Did you know about this?
Cecilia waved a hard copy at her. She had bright patches of color on her cheeks, and her short red hair seemed to be standing on end.
What?
Lady Cecilia, furious, made most people move quickly out of her way. Harris, secure in her status as captain and friend, stood her ground.
This court decision...
Court decision? On your competency?
Of course the court would restore full competency to Cecilia. It would be crazy to pretend that this individual was anything but competent.
No, on the yacht.
No... What about it?
The court has decided against the petition of my family to set aside that portion of my will which left you the yacht. Therefore, the yacht belongs to you.
Harris stared at her.
That's ridiculous. You're not comatose, you're competent. That reverses all the bequests. You told me that.
Yes, it does. Or it would have, that is, if that idiot Berenice and her fat-headed husband hadn't quarreled with my will and involved the court directly in that instance. Because the matter came under separate adjudication, don't you love this verbiage, the court's decision is final and not reversed by my regaining competence. And the court decided in your favor, thank goodness, or otherwise it would have been Berenice's. It's your yacht.
Harris raked a hand through her dark hair. She had not even thought about the bequest or the court's decision since Cecilia had been declared competent.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard of. I can't... What am I supposed to do with a yacht? Or you without one? I won't take it. I'll give it back to you.
You can't give it back. Not unless you're willing to pay the penalty tax. It's within the legal limit for a bequest, but not a gift.
Oh, dear.
Harris had no idea what that tax would be. But her own affairs were somewhat confused at the moment, thanks to the abrupt changes in the government. She didn't know if she had enough credits to pay the tax or not.
Oh, it's not so bad. I suppose you'll run it as a charter, and suppose you'll let me charter it.
Of course, if that's what it takes, but... Oh, what a mess.
Still, she felt a little jolt of delight at the base of her brain. Her own ship. Not even a fleet captain owned a ship outright. She fought back unseemly glee with little struggle when she realized the other implications of ownership. Docking fees, repairs, crew salaries. All her responsibility now. Cecilia's expression suggested she had already thought of these things and was enjoying Harris's realization.
Don't worry. I'll pay generously. I'll supply my own staff, cook, gardener.
Of course.
And there were bound to be legalities associated with running a charter, too. Harris had no idea what kind of contractual agreement owners needed with those who hired them, not to mention what permits she might need from whatever government bureaus were still grinding out the daily quota of paperwork.
Kevil Mahoney. He can tell you where to go for legal advice if you don't want the same person who argued your case for the bequest.
Thanks. It would have been so much easier.
I know. And I don't blame you for fighting back when my family acted like such idiots. It's not your fault, though I was mad enough to grind you into powder, too. Just when I'd gotten her back to a decent look, instead of that lavender and teal abomination. Berenice will pay for this. I've filed suit against them, and I intend to make up every fee they cost me.
I'm sorry. It's just that I thought if I had the ship, I could help you.
And you did. And don't lie to me, Harris Serrano. I may be rejuvenated, but I didn't lose 80 years of experience. 1 second after you were appalled, you were delighted. You've always wanted your own ship.
Yes, I did. And I tried to fight it down.
Don't.
Her employer, still her employer, even though the terms would be different now, gave her a wicked grin. Harris had found Lady Cecilia de Marctos to be formidable enough as an unrejuvenant. Clearly, that had been the mellow form.
Nobody knows what the government's going to do now. Bunny seems to be running things with the same bureaucrats, except for poor Piercy. I don't myself think it was Piercy's fault, but everyone's afraid he was in it with Lorenza.
Surprising tolerance from someone who had been Lorenza's helpless victim, for someone planning to sue her family, family that had, however ineptly, tried to protect her interests. This was no time to argue, though. Harris looked away, and spotted another bit of scrap from the renovation.
I don't hate Percy. I don't even hate Lorenza. Although if she stood in front of me, I would kill her without a second thought, as I would kill anyone that vile. I do hate to think of her running around loose somewhere.
I don't think she is. A few of my crew had a bone to pick with the individual who gave the orders that led to Irulan's death.
Namely, Oblo, Meharry, Petrus, and Sirkin. Though she didn't intend to mention names where anyone might have left a censer.
The, remaining biological contaminants were assaulted into her quarters. In the ensuing investigation, it was discovered that she had a very efficient lethal chamber built into her counseling booths.
I didn't hear about this.
Station security didn't allow it to be used. They thought it would cause panic, and they were probably right. Just the discovery of that many illicit biologicals could panic station dwellers. Anyway, they also found items the lady could not account for, which apparently match with jewels known to the insurance databases as Lorenza's.
And you found out because...
I found out because I have the best damn data tech in or out of Fleet, m'lady, and that's all I'll say here and now.
Ah. Then suppose you come to my suite, if you still consider it my suite, and we'll decide where your ship is headed and whether I want to tag along.
Cecilia's furniture had been reinstalled, and they settled into her study. Cecilia looked around, nodding.
I do like the effect of that striped brocade with the green carpet, although I'm not sure about the solarium yet.
I thought you were going to restock it with miniatures.
I was, but I keep thinking that I could go back to riding.
She meant competition, Harris understood, just as she herself would have meant the fleet if she'd said return to space. Harris watched the miniature waterfall in the solarium. She preferred falling water to any sort of fake wildlife.
I like the ferns.
One thing I will insist on, if you're to have me for a passenger, is a crew no more than half ex-military.
Cecilia leaned back in her chair with an expression that made it clear she meant what she'd said.
Why?
Skoderin, probably. But surely Cecilia ought to realize that Skoderin had been more than balanced by that crew of civilian layabouts and incompetence she'd had before. This didn't surprise her, but she'd hoped Cecilia would be less blunt about it.
Not just Skoderin. I know you can argue that my original civilian crew was just as full of lethal mistakes. Of course, not all ex-military are crooks or traitors, nor are all civilians honest and hardworking. But what bothered me was your inability to see past the distinction yourself. You had had superb performance from that girl Sirkin all through the earlier trouble. You had been so happy with her. And you were willing to believe that she went bad even when I, isolated as I then was, could spot sabotage.
You're right. I did make a mistake.
Not a mistake, my dear. A whole series of them. You misjudged her not once, but repeatedly. That's my point. You have a pattern, understandable but indefensible, of believing that the military is more loyal, more honorable than most civilians. You even told me that Sirkin was as good as Fleet more than once, and your inability to see past that pattern nearly got us all killed. I'm doing this for your own good, Harris. You have chosen to live in a civilian world. You must learn how to trust those of us who can be trusted and recognize deceit even in former shipmates.
And you think the way to do this is to hire civilians?
I think the way to do it is to admit what went wrong and work on correcting it. Isn't that what you would do if an admiral pointed out a characteristic error?
Harris wanted to say that Cecilia was no admiral, but she had to admit the logic of Cecilia's argument. She had mistaken the cause of Sirkin's problem. She had not even looked for sabotage, not seriously.
I don't want to fire any of our present crew.
She crossed mental fingers as she told herself that Kutsudis, not yet aboard, still counted as present crew.
No need. Just hire civilians for a while. Like Brun. I'm sure you can find others, perhaps not as good as Sirkin, but good enough. Think of recruits, if you must, rather than the trained people you had. Surely there were good and bad recruits.
Oh, yes.
Harris remembered a miserable tour as an officer in charge of basic training. She had hated it, and she hadn't been very good at it. Of course there had been bad recruits. Zittler, for instance, who had come into the fleet convinced that he could make a fortune manufacturing illicit drugs aboard ship. or the skinny girl from some mining colony who had gotten all the way through medical screening without anyone noticing she had parasites. There you are, then. It's just a matter of overcoming your biases.
Yes, ma'am.
Harris hoped the emphasis would let Cecilia know when to quit. It was unnerving to see all those years of experience in the bright eyes across from her. She began to understand why Cecilia had been reluctant to have rejuve treatments before. Ronnie held Rafaela close and buried his face in her dark hair.
I don't see why it makes the least difference. I didn't go along with my family, you know that. I'm the one who got Aunt Cecilia out of that nursing home. Why should your parents take it out on me?
They're not taking it out on you. They're pulling their investments out of your parents' operations. And they don't think that's a good time to discuss marriage settlements.
But will they come around later?
I don't know, Ron. They're seriously annoyed with your parents, and they don't see your prospects improving anytime soon. They think you'll be under a cloud politically.
Hang politics. I have enough, you have enough. We could go off somewhere and just live.
But you have a seat in council now.
As long as that lasts.
While daily life seemed to be unchanged, the political structure had shifted back and forth dramatically in the past few weeks.
They don't want trouble between us because you're voting your family stock and your seat, and they're voting against you. And don't say it wouldn't cause trouble because look how angry you are now.
I'm not angry because they voted against me in council. I'm angry because they won't let us get married because I might be upset later if they vote against me. Oh, it's all too complicated. I love you, Rafa.
I know, and I love you. But we are both wound up in our families and their rivalries, and I can't see either of us pulling something dramatic and stagey.
Brun did?
Brun is a law unto herself, even as a fluffhead she was, and now... We aren't like Brun, either of us. We were born to be respectable.
We did have one adventure.
And we'll have each other later. Or we won't. And we'll survive either way. Be reasonable, Ronnie. You got your aunt out of the building, but it was Brun who thought up the hot air balloon. Neither of us could have been that crazy.
I don't want to leave you. I don't want to lose you.
Nor I.
For a moment, she clung to him with all the passion he desired. Then she pushed herself away and was gone.
Damn!
Ronnie wanted to kick the wall, as he would have before the island. He really hated it when she was right. Then he thought who might be able to help. If only he could make her understand how important it was. Cecilia looked up from her desk to see her nephew standing in the doorway.
Ronnie, I'm delighted to see you. I'd hoped you'd come before we left.
He didn't answer, just gave her a sickly smile.
What? I already thanked you for getting me out of that place. And if you don't think I mean it, just take a look at your stock accounts.
It's not that, Aunt Cecilia. And I wish you hadn't done that, really.
The boy didn't want money? That was new. That was unbelievable. She looked more closely. The wavy chestnut hair looked dull. He had lavender smudges under his hazel eyes, and a skin tone that would have made her think hangover if he hadn't been so obviously sober and miserable.
What then?
She'd fixed him once. He was supposed to stay fixed. She couldn't provide deadly danger every time he needed pepping up. He slouched into her room as if his backbone were overcooked asparagus and slumped into one of her favorite leather chairs.
It's Rafaela.
Of course. Young love. She'd been glad he wasn't still involved with Brun, since that young lady was in no mood for romance. But she'd approved of Rafa. Moreover, she'd thought the girl had more sense than to jilt Ronnie. He wasn't bad, and Rafa was just the sort of girl to keep him in line.
What did you do?
Nothing. But my parents did plenty. And her parents told her to break it off.
Because of?
Because of you. I know you've got every right to be angry with them. But the thing is, Rafa's parents don't want the families involved right now.
I'm not angry with you. They shouldn't blame you if I don't.
She says they do.
And you're sure it's not that she's found someone else?
Yes, I'm sure. She said she loves me. But she won't cross them.
Idiot.
Cecilia opened her mouth to say more, and then realized the other implications. the ones Ronnie hadn't yet seen. Her suits imperiled the holdings of Ronnie's parents, his guarantees of future income, and might imperil any financial settlements made in the course of betrothal, exchange of assets being the normal complement to marriage. And Rafa, the level-headed Rafa that she considered strong-minded enough to keep Ronnie in check, would not tangle her family in any such trouble either. It all made perfectly good sense, and Cecilia found herself doubly angry that the good sense could not be denied.
She's not really. She's just loyal, that's all.
Greedy.
Carrying prudence to a ridiculous degree. The girl had money enough of her own. She was of age. She could make her own decisions.
So I thought if I could do something to prove myself, and maybe you would let me come along.
No! No, Ronnie. Though you are my favorite nephew, and I owe you my life, this is not the place for you.
But I thought if Rafa's parents knew I was with you, it would change their minds.
No, dear. The dear slipped out and shocked her. She never called any of her relatives dear. Had the Guarnesi done something to her mind during rejuvenation? The memory of those lawsuits reassured her. She hadn't softened. Not really.
It won't work, because you'd still be seen as a boy with a patron. You need them to see you as a man, an independent man with his own property, his own assets.
He looked at her as if he had never thought of that. Perhaps he hadn't. He was, after all, some 60 years younger.
Then what can I do?
Cecilia wished for a moment she had been a more conventional aunt. He would not have consulted a more conventional aunt. He would have found someone outrageous, someone who had never been married or wanted to be, and she could have clucked from the sidelines. She felt like clucking now. Grow up, she wanted to say. Just do something, she wanted to say. But there he was, born charming, and even more so with this new and genuine worry upon him. She wanted to smack him, and she wanted to cuddle him, and neither would do any good.
You might go talk to Captain Serrano.
Great idea. Thanks. I will.
And he bounced up, suddenly vibrant and eager again. She watched him stride out, with the spring in his step and the sparkle in his eye, and wondered at herself. Rejuvenation was supposed to rejuvenate everything. She had herself made the usual jokes about those of her friends who suddenly acquired young companions. But Ronnie did nothing for her, and she knew it wasn't because he was her nephew. She just didn't feel like it.
Not that I was ever ridden by that torment much.
She ran over the shopping lists on her desk comp again. She had been too busy, and too aware of the power such a passion would have over her schedule, if nothing else. Harris saw not the spoiled brat she'd once despised, but the handsome, bright young man who had become what she thought of as officer material.
Aunt Cecilia said you might be able to help me.
If I can, of course.
Harris wondered if this was Cecilia's obscure vengeance for Arash's favor.
It's about Rafaela.
Ronnie outlined his problem. Harris recognized the implications, as Cecilia had, but unlike her, saw no reason not to tell Ronnie about them. She still thought of him as young officer material, which put her in the teaching role. She led him through the relevant financial bits and watched his dismay growing.
But Rafa isn't that greedy.
I don't know that I'd call it greedy, but you're both registered embryos, remember? Smart, educated, trained from birth to consider the welfare of the family as a whole. I don't think it has anything to do with wanting more things than you could give her. I think it has to do with conflicting loyalties.
But if she loves...
Ronnie, think. Would you have married that opera singer?
She could see what opera singer forming on his forehead until his memory caught up.
No, of course not. She was nothing like Rafa.
Why not? You were besotted with her at the time, I gather. Loved her, didn't you?
Oh, but that was... it was different. She'd never have done for a wife.
And why? Was she personally disgusting in some way? Lacking manners? Stupid?
No, it wasn't anything like that, but... she wouldn't have been a good match. For the family.
Whether you really loved her or not. You can imagine someone you did really love that wouldn't be right because it would hurt the family, right?
Right.
Ronnie, this isn't an age in which anyone gives much for romantic love.
If it happens that you fall for someone of the right class at the right time, then fine, but most people don't. Petrus and I served on the same ships and never allowed ourselves to notice that we loved each other. It would have been bad for the ship. Grown-ups have values outside their own skins.
And you're saying I'm not grown up yet?
No, you are. You've grown a lot in the time I've known you, and frankly, you've surprised me. But this last lingering bit of adolescence is hanging on right where it usually does.
I suppose you think I'm silly.
Not at all. Nor do I think your situation with Rafa will last forever. Especially not if you set out to change it.
How?
Two things. You either need to change the overall situation so that your parents' quarrel with your aunt no longer imperils your inheritance and your parents' political and economic allies, or you need to change your situation in relation to your parents. Ideally, both.
Both? That's impossible.
Ronnie began to stride around the small office, exactly like a nervous colt in a small box stall. Harris expected him to bump his nose into a wall at any moment.
I can't make Aunt Cecilia change her mind. Nobody's ever made Aunt Cecilia change her mind. And I can't make my parents be someone else. Not unless I repudiate them and change my name or something. How will disinheriting myself help convince Rafa?
Ronnie, look at what you've told me you want. You want to marry Rafa, but I assume this means you also want a long, happy, profitable life, and you don't want to harm either her family or yours.
Well, yes.
You also want the best for your Aunt Cecilia, don't you?
Yes, but I can't do all that at once.
Not if you don't look at it. You know my background. Well, a consistent mistake I've seen commanders make is defining the mission too narrowly. Did you ever study the Patchcock incursion in the Royals?
Yes. It got kind of complicated.
It was complicated from the beginning, and an oversimplified mission statement made it worse. Military commanders like to see neat, tidy problems. Well, I suppose everyone does. The dog is howling, shoot the dog. The contract colonists are rioting, shoot the colonists. The contract corporation reneged on its contract to provide medical services, shoot the corporation CEO. The council told Fleet Command they wanted no more rioting on Patchcock. They didn't tell Fleet Command that a 2-month interruption in shipments of ore would bankrupt Glasgow Metals with cascading effects through its parent corporation into half a dozen shareholders. They didn't tell Fleet that a 2-month interruption of ore shipments would mean cutting off the food supply not only to Patchcock, but also to Darien and Slidell. They didn't tell Fleet that Glasgow Metals had refused to provide services agreed on and then altered the contracts to reflect that. So Fleet went in to sit on some malcontents and ended up responsible for the deaths by starvation of several thousand people, the deaths by direct action of thousands more, and, if you care to look at it that way, which the then-king did, the suicides of 18 members of high-ranking families, including 5 of the 6 chairholders most closely connected to Glasgow. The other one was murdered by his own sister.
Ronnie looked very uncomfortable.
I didn't know all that. They told us about it as an example of a commander losing control of troops in a battlefield situation.
Hushed it up. I thought they might have done it even after the trials at the time.
Harris grinned, without humor. Her family had been involved in that one, too.
My point is that if you want something to happen, you must specify that something with great care and as much completeness as possible. Then, and only then, can you devise a strategy to accomplish what you really want. All of it, and not some little bit that turns out to be meaningless when everything else falls apart.
Ronnie didn't answer at once, a good sign. When the silence had become uncomfortably long, for Harris had chores to do, she tried to divert him to another topic.
What are they going to do with the Royal Aerospace Service?
Eh? Oh, I don't know. I was told I was not required to report, which really meant they didn't want me. That's one reason I thought I'd do better with Aunt Cecilia, staying out of trouble.
That didn't sound good. The rich young men who made up the officer corps of the Royal Aerospace Service might cause trouble in a lump while on duty, but would surely cause trouble if suddenly turned out, idle and feckless, into the streets of the capital. Someone wasn't thinking clearly, not for the first time.
That's good for you. You are free to do something else, something that will convince Raffaella's parents that you are a mature, responsible, independent young man. Ideal husband material.
But what?
Go talk to Lord Thornbuckle. I'm sure he can find a mission for you. Don't tell him about Rafa. Just ask what you can do to help.
When he'd left, Harris put her head in her hands for a moment. She wanted to get away before someone else had a crisis for her to deal with. If only Cecilia would quit fuming about her family, they could leave for somewhere, anywhere, and be out of reach of everyone's family problems.